Apology.
Pain.
Anger. Fear.
Shame.
Blame.
Silence.
Rage!
Stop! Stop! This circle, this cycle of abuse, stops right here.
This Sunday, June 25th at 6 p.m., the topic of Youth Speaks Out will be domestic violence. Three young people from Willits will discuss the effect adult violence has on the children who witness or experience it. The bumper stickers say there's no excuse for domestic violence. These students will explore how children cope and survive it. This will be a call-in show, and you are encouraged to bring your experiences and knowledge to the community. That's this Sunday, June 25th at 6 p.m., on Youth Speaks Out, here on KZYX and Z. Youth Speaks Out is brought to you in part by our members in the Mendocino County Youth Project Share Crises Program, providing emergency shelter to youth in crises throughout Mendocino County. If you are interested in providing short-term housing for youth in need, you could call Bill at 463-4915 or David at 964-1228.
Welcome to What You Don't Know, Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the last Sunday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. and is hosted by students in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of listeners. Tonight's hosts are me, Jackie,
Jesse,
Amanda.
We've been students at Willits High School and participated in the peer counseling program. Tonight our topic is domestic violence and how it affects teenagers who witness or experience it. We'll also listen to a few segments from this year's Willits High School peer counseling play. This will be a call-in show, and later on we will encourage you to call in with your questions, insights, and experiences at 894-2448 or a toll-free number 1-800-499-7117. We'll begin with about 10 minutes of this year's Willits High School counseling play, Lifelines.
I wish I were as brave. I want to break out of this. I really do. But I feel like my hands are tied.
I can't help but noticing.
Oh, this? Yeah. If you want, I can wear a gag, too. That's all part of it.
What?
Never mind. I can't talk about it, Matt. I want to. I really do. But people would be hurt. People I love. My mom, my friends. I can't disappoint them like that.
Moms are pretty strong, Jesse. I mean, for whatever reason your hands are tied, you can untie them. The choice is yours.
He's right. Mom, you know everything about me, Mom. You lived my happiness with me when I fell in love. You made me whole. My life was at last complete. And then, it all changed. My friends, they saw how I forgave his excuses and all of his broken promises. And one afternoon, with no warning, he told me it was over. And you held me as I cried, and you watched as I prayed every night for him to come back to me. And he never did. But there were some things you didn't see. You couldn't see, because I never told you when he started to control my life. He hated me for being friends with the guys. I couldn't see my friends. He even took the keys to my car. But of course, he could do anything he pleased. And then, he started to hit me. And because I loved him, I forgave him over and over again. He'd tell me how sorry he was, and then he'd bring me flowers afterwards. And then he'd act like nothing ever happened. I was afraid to tell you because I didn't want to hurt you, to let you down, or make you mad. To bring up old memories for you. And I never told you that in the end, he forced me to have sex. He was so much stronger than me, and he insisted. I tried so hard to get away. God, what if I'm pregnant? I'd kill myself, I swear. I can't face them after that. I can't go home. I used to believe I would never have sex before marriage. I felt trapped. I wanted to be real with you, all of you, but I was afraid. For almost a year, I pretended it never happened. I didn't even tell my closest friends because they knew I would never compromise what I believed in. But life went on. We went on road trips. Conversations always turned to sex. It was such a hot topic for them.
How do you keep a diaphragm in there anyway?
Can women really have orgasms in their sleep?
So there I was, right in the middle of all these crazy conversations, and no one even bothered to include me. They probably thought,
oh, don't include Jessie. She's going to wait to have sex until after she's married. It's a really important value to her.
So I pretended. I was afraid to tell them, and I'm afraid to tell you, because I'm afraid you wouldn't forgive me. No, I'm afraid I can't forgive myself. The truth is, I'm learning now that I did what I needed to do to survive. The next step is to work on loving myself and to trust what I know to be true. What I know to be true is that one out of every three high school students experiences dating violence in a relationship. I am not alone. This can happen to you. It can happen to anyone. I know that I have the right to say no and not feel guilty. And I know that I have the right to be treated with respect.
I need to tell you guys something. I don't think it'll be too hard to tell you who I really am, because I have a strong ally. My mom.
Your mom?
Mommy.
Mom?
Seriously, you don't know my mom. She truly is my best friend. Even in ways you can't even understand. She's always been there for us, my brother and me, especially after divorce. But money was always a problem. She'd never let on. She struggled so hard to make sure her boys were happy. That's the way she was, always making the best of things. I remember once we had this bed. It was real junk. And I kept bugging her about getting a new one, and she'd say, "Don't worry, we'll get one soon." But never saying that we don't have the money. I feel so bad for having nagged her like that. I don't know how religious she was, but when she was in the hospital giving birth to my brother and me, she had this medal of St. Jude. She wore it. All the connections it had. I knew it was important to her. And her family, her parents, her kids, we are the most important things in the world to her. It's hard to talk about it now.
You know what? You can just shut up. You don't know anything about me, okay? If I wanted your opinion, I would ask for it. Okay, all right, okay, fine, fine. I'll take it back. It's not your fault you see me like that. I fought really hard to protect my image, and I couldn't let him or anyone else see that they could hurt me. I've had to be tough to survive. But this mask, it's really lonely keeping up an image, and I don't want to do it anymore. I shouldn't have to do it anymore.
Aww, it's so lonely. I don't want to do it anymore.
You guys, just listen.
Whatever.
Just listen. Listen. Listen! I just want you to see. I want you to see. The first time I stood up to him, the first time I looked into his drunken eyes and he saw mine, the first time I told him that he promised, the first time I stood up for my mom, I want you to be haunted the way I was by how he looked at me. Dark, ugly, red-faced, gritted teeth. When he told me to go to my room, or I too would be slapped. And I want you to know the silence when I refused, when I defied his authority with disrespectful, soundless glare, when I thought that he was going to reach out and try and kill me too, and Mommy would cry out my name in the dark again, but I wouldn't be there to save her. And I want you to know the time that he hunted us down, us in the bathroom, on the floor, doors locked, heads down, listening to his voice at the front door, threatening us, threatening our protectors, promising to kill us all, with drunken swagger. And I want you to see the revolving sirens in the front yard of our quiet neighborhood. The shame of my tears in front of the policeman who took away the loaded guns and empty bottles. The policeman who kept us from dying in control again. And I want you to know how hard it is to go to school the next day and smile. Especially when everyone wants to know, how come you're not quite so bubbly today? Apology.
Pain.
Anger. Fear.
Shame.
Blame.
Silence.
Rage!
Stop! Stop! This circle, this cycle of abuse, stops right here. And now, you are all witnesses.
We know the man who forced us against our will.
We know the man who held a knife to our throat.
The father who carried a gun.
The father who used his fists in our face and our bellies.
We know the parent who couldn't protect us.
We won't be silent anymore.
I came so close to killing him that night. I was afraid he'd hurt my mom.
All us kids saw Dad hitting Mom, but we never talked about it.
He forced me. He was so much stronger than me.
I hate my dad for what he did to my mom. He held a gun to her head and she yelled at me, "Call 911!
I ran to the gun cabinet to get a gun to protect my mom. I would have killed him if I had.
I wanted to stop him from hurting her.
But I was afraid.
Thank you for tuning in today. That was a short piece from the Willits High School Peer Counseling Play. The peer counseling play is a play put on by about 9 to 12 peer counselors in Willits. We travel up and down California, and a lot of their stories are true stories that they've lived. And this year they focused a lot on domestic violence, and that's why we're here today. So I'm going to turn it over to Jackie and Amanda and see if they have anything to say about domestic violence right now.
I've been so fortunate to be in the peer counseling play last year, and just to participate in the program was great. And as I packed away and looked forward to college in Arcata, a little piece of me was, you know, really, really disappointed that there was not a peer counseling program at Humboldt, and most colleges don't have programs like that. But I fortunately did get to be in a class called Theater of the Oppressed, and In this classroom, we had 30 people who didn't even know each other, coming from different areas of the world, discuss their lives. On the first day, it really hit me when 25 people had just come out and said, I have experienced domestic violence or emotional abuse. And some of these people, the ages range, you know, we had some adults mm-hmm. and we had some younger college kids. But no matter what age, many of those people had not been able to process the fear, the pain, and just the knowledge of not having anybody to talk to. It's really difficult. So in this classroom, we were all very safe and secure. We got to discuss a lot about the things that we have been through. But In a way, it's a wonderful class. It's helped. For example, there's a friend that I had, and she had been going through an abusive relationship. And it was very difficult for her to see that even though she loved him, he was hurting her. He was hurting her. He was hitting her children. And the only thing that she could say was that she loved him. And the things that we could show her through such things as psychodrama, where you confront, what we do is we, the person who has been through an abusive situation will pick people who say, like, she'll pick a male figure to pretend that he is the abuser. And she'll introduce the situation to the classroom and say, this is a typical thing that will happen in my household. And she has to relive that moment, that fear and the pain and the physical abuse, just to give her enough strength to run away and stand up to him and say, you can't hit me anymore. You can't touch my kids anymore. I'm an independent woman, and this is not the type of family I want. And so through this class, she was able to get away and learn how to cope with the pain.
I have to say that that's the beauty of the peer counseling play, is that it helps everybody in it and everyone that sees it.
Definitely.
I was in the peer counseling play this year, and for me, it really helped because, like Jackie just said, I got to process a lot of things that had been harder for me to process by myself, but I was able to talk with people about it and get other views, excuse me, and opinions, and that really helped me clarify what was really going on. And also, I've noticed that from performing afterwards, you have a lot of people come up to you and say, you know, thanks, because that was my story too. And I know personally, going through a domestic violence situation, I couldn't talk about it for a long time because I felt that I was alone. And because it's such a hidden problem in our society, a lot of people don't talk about it. And when we don't talk about it, we isolate ourselves. And when you isolate yourselves, then you really are alone. And so definitely I think the peer counseling play really helps get that out and get it out in the open. And only when it's out in the open can it be solved.
Yeah, I think people don't realize how much others have in common with them. If they're in a domestic violence situation, they don't realize that they can turn to somebody and get help. And there are a lot of places you can go for help. If you can't talk to anybody at home or in school, if there's nobody around that you feel you're safe and you can trust, there are hotlines and there are phone numbers. I'm going to give a couple of those out right now. We'll be giving out a few more later on. The first one is 463-HELP. That's H-E-L-P. And there's 456-9999. There's also a 1-800 number. It's 1-800-575-HELP. And that's a 24-hour crisis line. If you are in the Willits or Laytonville area, up around there, you can get in touch with the Willits High School Peer Counseling Program. And to get in touch with any of the peer counselors, if you're a younger listener and you'd like to get in touch with somebody about your age and you just want some help or some support, you can call 459-7700, extension 1513. And we're going to go back to the domestic violence. What have you guys experienced any kind of situations where you've had to help somebody get out of a domestic violence situation? And how did you deal with that?
I haven't been in a situation like that, but I can comment on the fact that at Willits High School, at least when I attended there last year, nobody could open up. Nobody could be truthful with each other because they put up this mask. Everyone wants to be beautiful. Everyone wants to be popular. Everybody wants to be going to the parties and be in that social scene where it stuffs down the real hidden problems, if there is one, like domestic abuse. And I think it drives kids to alcohol and to drugs and to other things that definitely don't help the problem but perpetuate it into the future. Domestic violence and emotional abuse is a cycling disease. It doesn't stop until you are able to process it yourself. And that's a very scary thing when you go to school and you can't turn to teachers for help as well.
Personally, I've known people that have been in that situation, or just maybe not where they're actually being physically abused, but more of an emotional abuse. And a lot of times that's really just as bad, if not worse, because physical abuse, the wounds go away, but emotional hangs around there for a while, and that can be really hard. I've had friends that have been in abusive situations, more emotional, but what I've done to really help them, or what I've tried to do to help them, I should say, is just talk with them. And maybe, because from an outside point of view, I can see what's going on, and probably better than they can, because in the situation, like Jesse was saying, all they could say is, oh, well, I love that person. And that really puts a blindfold on people sometimes. And if you can maybe, repeat back what they are telling you. I had a person that I did that with, and she would say, well, he only lies to me sometimes. And so I would say, okay, now stop. And I would say exactly what she had said back to her, and then I would ask her opinion on that. And that helped her look at it from an outside point of view and get a wider view on it. And I think that really helped her clarify. And I think that, if you ever come up with a situation where you're trying to help someone get out of it,
definitely talking to them and helping them clarify and really see what's going on is probably the best thing you can do for them.
What a lot of people don't realize is that the long-term effects of a painful situation occur later in life. A lot of people in my theater class would just find themselves in school not doing well, not really feeling healthy, and it came up later in this class that they haven't had time to process what they've been through, so they're suffering their daily lives because of maybe one or two such situations in the past that, you know, they had nobody to turn to and nobody to talk to. Mm-hmm.
Another thing that I've found really helps if you're in a situation where somebody's coming to you for help is to just stop and listen. Just let them talk. And, you know, if they need to cry, offer them the shoulder to cry on. Just be there and be a friend for them. Another topic that was brought up to me earlier about this was the effects of violence in media and how that affects home situations and relationships. Do you guys think that the media adds to the problem of domestic violence?
I believe that it does in maybe not 100% so, but a part of me thinks that, you know, we have, say for an example, the Pokemon craze these little kids are going through right now. They have the cards, they bring them to school, you know, they trade them, they watch the show religiously every single day. And it's okay, you know, that's an okay thing for our kids to be obsessed with. But what people don't realize is that, you know, these images, these little cartoon characters are embedded in their minds. And, you know, for me, I see that almost as a parallel situation to violence. They see violence. If they get into it, it's, you know, it's going to become normal for them. If they made trading cards for violence, you know, I don't know. Who knows what, you know, what could happen. But I'm just saying, I think it's a possibility that it definitely affects children, especially if, you know, they're home by themselves and their family members don't tell them, you know, what's right and what's wrong. They definitely learn from that.
Amanda, do you think that in a school situation that you can turn to a teacher, have you had, in any kind of situation, it might not be domestic violence, it could be just that you're feeling down someday, do you feel that you can turn to teachers for support?
Actually, I did turn to a teacher once when I was younger. Ironically, this teacher had both of my parents and when they were in grade school, and so the teacher was already kind of familiar with them, and I had mentioned offhandedly to my teacher that my mom had gotten a restraining order against my dad because he was abusive. And the teacher just kind of said, "Oh, really? You know, that's too bad." And that was it. That was all that ever happened about it. And as I'm the oldest child out of three, and I lived in a domestic violence situation, and typically the older children tend to be, you know, the go-getters, the do-gooders, the, you know, overachiever, and, you know, they do everything that they can, and they're in every club and every sport, and, you know, and they beat themselves up if they're not the best out of, you know, at all of the things all at once. And that's how I was. And so I could kind of understand where my teacher wouldn't have really felt alarmed, because I did well in school and I didn't act up in class, and, you know, I don't think he felt that he had any reason for it. And at the time, you know, I had never really turned to anybody because we just didn't talk about that, and, it, you know, we weren't supposed to. And so I didn't really think anything about it. But now looking back, and I realize now that he should have taken it seriously and really tried to do something about it, but he never did. And now I've mentioned it to teachers. You know, I've had to go, you know, to court sometimes, and I, you know, I've talked to him about it, and I've had teachers now ask me, you know, "Well, how's it going? Are you okay?" And it seems like the more caring ones that you know and, you know, have known for a few years will do that, but a lot of teachers that, you know, you've only had for a little while, I don't feel that they would really do that, and that's kind of disheartening sometimes, but that's my experience with it.
Yeah, it's pretty understandable that most teachers don't feel that, you know, they're in the position to be a counselor or whatever, but they're also people that we see every single day, you know, almost more than our family members. And I guess sometimes in high school I wish that when I couldn't turn to my family members and, you know, the people that I did see other than my friends were teachers, and I've always felt like, you know, I wanted to turn to them and say, I'm hurting right now, or I'm going through a difficult situation. Is there any way that, you know, you could just maybe sit down and listen, you know? So, I don't know, it's kind of a tricky topic. What do you think, Jesse?
I think that it's hard, you know, like you were saying, for teachers to be able to open up. I don't think that they've had, a lot of them haven't experienced the training to know how to comfort somebody who's going through such a hard time. I would like to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show. If you have any input or any comments you want to give us, anything, experiences you'd like to share, you can call. The number is 1-800-499-7117, or you can call it 895-2448. There's a lot of red flags if you are, maybe if you are the abuser, there's a lot of red flags. If you, maybe don't realize that when you're with your partner that you embarrass them in the presence of others, that's something you might want to look out for. If you can't be comfortable around your partner when you're with friends or family, if you try and keep it hidden and you tell them, well, I can't see you when I'm out with my friends, don't come up, don't talk to me, that's another thing you might want to look out for. I don't know, do you guys know of any other really big red flags that people could be aware of in abusive relationships or family relationships?
I noticed with my one of my friends who was in an abusive relationship that she started to lie a lot about where she was going and... just, she was, you know, I would ask her, like, you know, what are you doing tonight? And she'll say, she'll get really flustered and just really nervous. And she's like, I think my husband and I are going to do something. So, that could be a possibility, maybe not the primary one, but.
Another thing I've noticed, too, that In an abusive relationship, the abuser gets extremely jealous. If you were to go out with your friends, or you wanted to go out to the movies one night, and he or she says, no, you can't go, you have to stay home, but I'm going to go out and do this, that might be something that you want to look for, that you want to think about, well, is this a safe place for me to be in? Because if it's not, there are places to go to get help. I'm going to give out a couple more numbers here, and then I'll let Amanda and Jackie... maybe Amanda, she is not saying much right now. Say a little bit. The phone numbers for the National Domestic Violence Abuse Hotline is 1-800-799-7233. You can also call Project Sanctuary, which is located on the coast, primarily in Fort Bragg. They've got a small office in Ukiah. You can call 462-9196. And 961-1507. I'd also like to remind our listeners today that this is a call-in show, and we really appreciate phone calls. We want to hear from you. Tell us what you're thinking about this show. Our numbers again are 1-800-499-7117, or the studio phone is 895-2448. Sorry, I'm throwing out so many numbers. Man, did you have any comments?
I was just gonna say something about the red flag that you were talking about. Things that I've noticed is, like, sometimes your friends will get too busy to be hanging around with you, and it seemed, and the, like, you'll notice is that they gradually seem to be kind of getting away from more and more things. Like, you know, they might be in clubs, or, you know, they're doing some project, but they gradually start dropping them and moving away from their friends and spending more time with their partner, whoever they're with. And that can also be kind of a sign, because that can show that the partner is controlling the other person. You know, they're trying to take over that aspect of their life and you know, guilt trip them into spending more time with them. And that's really not a good thing.
I wanted to bring up something positive from all this grimness we're talking about here. There's a weekend in Humboldt County called Take Back the Night. And it's not a program, it's just an event where women who have been in an abusive relationship or have been sexually assaulted in some way or another get together, and they do like a candle vigil throughout the town, And one of the greatest part about this is that it's not only college women, but the whole community gets into it. Here and also in Ukiah, they do what's called a clothesline project, where all the women are invited to draw an image or words or something that they associate with in their painful situation on a t-shirt. And they get to string that up on a line and show people their pains and sufferings.
Also, something that I think is really important is there's a lot of programs for the people who have been victims of domestic violence, for both men and women. And but I think the programs that help the abusers are equally as important, because there's two parts to a violent situation. Actually, my mom leads a group of men that have been, they have convicted, I guess is the word, of domestic violence, or spousal abuse, or other forms of domestic violence. And they are sent to a mandatory class, and I believe it's a year-long class. And, you know, every Tuesday night they go and they have, and it's what it is an anger management class. And that, you know, if they can really be honest and open up and, you know, really try and learn something, that can, you know, that can really help to end the problem. And I have a number here, and it's for the Men's Alternative to Violence, and it's in Ukiah. And the number is 463-5672. And if anyone listening to this program is thinking that maybe that could be a problem for them or someone that they know, definitely spread the word. It's a good thing to end this cycle.
Again, I'd like to remind all of our listeners out there that this is a call-in, and we'd really like to hear from you. If you just want to call in and say, you know, I've known people who've been in there, and I really support what you guys are doing, that's great. We just want some kind of input from you guys to know, so that we know that this is a good program. And the number, again, is 1-800-499-7117.
I know that, like I said before, at Willits High School, it's really difficult to reach out and find somebody to talk to. If you're out there thinking that there's somebody you want to talk to, definitely talk to any of the peer counselors. They are there for you, and they're safe, secret people. Oh, we have a caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. I think one reason you're not getting callers is because you're doing such a great job of covering all of the bases.
Thank you.
I'd really like to hear you, or particularly Amanda, I guess, speak more from personal experience. When you go to school after, you know, you've been in a domestic violence situation at home, what's going through your head, and ideally, how would you like to interact with both your peers and your teachers after that, in a best-case situation? And I guess the other question is, do you see things that are not being done that should be done, where you could go to authorities and maybe try to make change as to how, you know, young people who live in that kind of a situation are either treated as in, you know, how somebody treats you day to day, or helped? And also, have you ever called one of those numbers, the phone numbers that you give out? And if so, what was your experience? And with that set of questions, I'll listen on the air.
Oh my goodness. Okay, let me get started. The first thing, how was it at school is, I guess, the first question. It was, for me, Erin, and a lot of other people I know that have been through it, is there's a very, very large attempt to cover it up. And I know from my personal experience, you know, I didn't want anybody to know, because, in our town, we were, you know, a nice family. We had a nice house. We had a nice car. You know, all us kids, I have two other brothers, younger brothers. We did well in school, and, you know, we were nice people, and I felt that, you know, we were respected. And in my opinion, you know, when I felt like, you know, when you heard about people who are in domestic violence situations, they were, you know, lower people, and, you know, they were into drugs, and, you know, and this whole bad lifestyle. And for me, that was just not, as I was trying to keep up this image and trying to protect myself from that, I couldn't handle that. And so I hid it. And I didn't talk to my friends about it. that I mentioned that I spoke once to a teacher. Other than that, I really haven't, and I've kept it hidden a lot. My parents finally got divorced when I was in eighth grade, and I'm going to be a senior when school starts, and so that's really helped me to get out of it. And looking back at it now, I don't know if I could handle it still being in it, because it is so hard. I remember there were nights, you know, school nights, when it wasn't safe to be at the house. And so we had this routine, and my mom would say, okay, go put on your sweats. And we would get our sweats and, you know, get a hairbrush or something like that, and we would go sleep in a car. And, you know, because we couldn't be home. And then we would have to get up the next day and go to school and pretend that nothing had ever happened. And, you know, maybe we had a test the next day or something like that. And you couldn't let anybody see that. And that was really, really hard. But you just got so used to it. It was like second nature. And it was just a part of life. As for, like, crisis lines, a lot of this happened when I was younger. And so I really was not aware of all the things that were available to me. And I think that's a lot of the problem for people out there, is they're just not aware of the resources that they have. Like 463 help, I didn't know about that. And I know that I think if I had known about them, I probably still wouldn't have felt that I could have used them. And for me, it was because I know that, you know, if my dad got arrested or something like that, if he was taken away, it wasn't so much that. It wasn't that he was arrested, because in my case, I really don't like my dad too much. And so that wasn't really the problem. It was just when he got out. That was a scary part, because it was the retaliation factor. He would come back and he would do something to us. And that was what was scary, is he would get you alone and you couldn't do anything. As for the authorities, excuse me, my mom has a restraining order against my dad right now. And that personally has really not helped. It's just a piece of paper and it really doesn't do any good. And my dad has actually said that, you know, if I want to kill you, I can still do it. And I think that we give restraining orders a little bit too much credit, because it's not a fence, it's not a barrier, it's just a piece of paper. And I know, like, you know, my dad has called and, you know, threatened us, and, you know, and he's, you know, he busted out the car, our windshield on our car, and he's done all kinds of things. But because, like, he called up once and he said, you're digging your own grave. And then he used a couple other colorful words along with that, of course. But because he just said, you're digging your grave, and didn't actually say, I'm going to kill you, which is what obviously the connotation is, that nothing was done about it. He wasn't arrested. Nothing happened. And that really, really disturbs me. You know, the case with the lady in Redwood Valley, you know, her husband was, you know, he was taken into jail and given a really low bail, and he got out and he went and he shot her. You know, that same judge that did that was my mom's judge. And so for me, that was really distressing, and it was really hard to deal with. So I think definitely the law needs to really crack down on that and make it a lot harder for those people. So that's it for me.
I was going to just say that even if you're not in a situation where you're not being abused or experiencing any type of violence or neglect, it's still good to know those resources are out there for, you know, the women that are around you, or men. A statistic says, according to the American Medical Association, family violence kills as many women every 5 years as the total number of Americans who died in the Vietnam War. Homicide is the second leading cause of death for women ages 15 to 24.
I'd also like to add to that you can't pick out an abuser. You can't pick out, you know, who's gonna be the next one that's gonna hit you. They can be anywhere. They could be your next door neighbor. They could be in your house. You can't stereotype what an abuser looks like or what an abusee looks like, because they can be anyone. They can be your best friend, or they could be your sister or brother. You can't judge. You gotta look for signs and you gotta watch. You gotta be there to listen for people. I know that From my experience, I've experienced dating violence, and I know that you can get out of it. It is a very hard step to take, and it takes a lot of courage, but there are resources out there, and for women and men both, you need to reach out to those resources. I know that I waited a very long time before I got out, and I never told anyone. That was the biggest part of my life, was to sit there and act like nothing was wrong. I've acted on stage many times, I've done many plays, but the biggest theater project I've ever done was life itself. And so you really do have to watch for those red flags. They're hard to see, they're hard to find, but you know, if you see somebody sitting there and they look like they need to cry or things are just getting too hard, you know, be there for them, just offer your hand to them. I know that because I got out of it, hold on, caller, I'll get you in just a minute. It has made me very, very much a stronger person, and I'll take you now. Okay, caller, you're on the air.
Hi. I just would like to make a comment about restraining orders.
Okay.
I think I was in a similar situation, and I felt the same frustration of not thinking I was protected, and I, now, looking back, I think how restraining orders are most effective is in the collectiveness of the threats as they come to you. So you probably already know this, but it's really a good idea to have your phone with a tape recorder so you get the messages on tape and save that, and you protect yourself by not allowing those calls to get to you. If anybody says anything to you of the nature of "I'm going to bury you" and things like that, you just do not allow the verbal abuse, and try to get it on a tape. And if one gets through, you usually are assigned a policeman, and you get that message to them. And even if it makes you feel kind of like attention getting or something, if you know what I mean, mm-hmm. You hate to bring the attention to yourself again, but they keep a record of that, and if ever you end up in court again, that record is there, and the consistency of that abuse on you really is a type of protection.
Yeah. Yes. Well, thank you for that information. That was very nice.
Well, my abuser has passed on to the other world now, and so the other thing I would say to families is, we're not doing them any favor if there's any kind of help for them to get, because usually there's some kind of other illness involved in it, too.
Yes.
So God bless you. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I would just like to congratulate the women who have made it to the step of getting that restraining order and getting their children out, because a lot of women I know will call the cops and will say, you know, I need help, I need to get away from the situation, but they won't ever put a restraining order, and they end up just living their life the same way over and over again.
Do you guys have any comments on date rape? You know, I've brought up that I've experienced it, and that I have gotten out of it, and it has made me a much stronger person. I am able to go out there and take on the world and feel confident in myself, but that's because I've reached out and I've asked for help. I've gotten the help that I need, and I'm still processing it, still going through it. Do you guys have any comments on that, or are there any callers out there who have any comments on that?
I can't really think of anything to say much about date rape, except that people don't realize that it's a very serious thing that is kept hidden. And people think that, you know, date rape is when, you know, someone will go, you know, and this is, someone will go on a date and they get violated and they're forced to have sex. But date rape, to me, is also having somebody, you know, take advantage of, say you're at a party, have someone take advantage of you, even in the most sexual way, even if it's not sex, if they're trying to get together with you or just trying to violate you in any way, to me, that's date rape. When you say no and they're persistent. I've unfortunately heard some bad news this past year about certain children or certain kids at a party who who have gone through similar situations. I'm hoping that they can get help.
Yeah, I think it's really hard for people. The statistics show that date rape is much more common than rape from a stranger. Being raped in the back of an alley is very less common than being raped by somebody that you know. And you usually know that person very well. It's usually somebody you've known for a couple of years, you know. But you've got a good acquaintanceship going on there, a friendship going on there. And so the person who was date raped, the person who was raped, feels even more violated. It's an emotional violation also. And so they're afraid to reach out because they don't want to get that person in trouble, and they don't know how it's going to come back on them because they know that person, and the person who was raped also knows all their friends, and they don't want retaliation to come back on them. And so I think it's really hard for people to know when is a safe time to go get help. And the truth is, any time and every time is safe. If you can't, if you're in a situation where the abuser is there, okay, then you can wait. Wait till he leaves. Wait till he goes out of the room. Wait till he leaves the house. Get somewhere safe. Get somewhere where you feel safe and get help. There are numbers to call, and I will give those out again at the end of the show. And I would really like to hear from some more callers, young callers,
me too,
old callers, any caller. Our phone number is 1-800-499-7117, or you can call our studio at 895-2448.
You know, it's always shocking to me how other cultures are so, it's so common for them to have the women say, you know, it's okay to be raped, even if they say no. Or, you know, like my friend Dan was telling me, in India, women are killed and it's fine. It's okay for those situations to occur. What do you think, Amanda?
I think definitely the oppression of women, I mean, internationally, is just so terrible. I did a project, actually, on women's suffrage, and I was really shocked to find out that women in, like, Iran still do not have the right to vote. And I know, like, myself, I'm still not old enough to vote, but that just seems perfectly natural that I would be able to. And I can't imagine not being able to. And just, it is so shocking to me that such a trivial privilege is still not given to them. And, I mean, it seems like it's so widespread, and it's really, really bad.
We have another caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello. I'd like to congratulate you on this program. It's really great, and I think it's an important thing to share with the community. And we're putting on a festival of activism at the Boonville Fairgrounds, and we've been inviting concerned groups throughout the community. And I'd just like to extend the invitation to you to connect with me and possibly do a presentation at this three-day free-to-the-public event. And my number, if you'd like to take it.
Okay, maybe. Yeah.
It's 961-6253.
And
my name is Raphael, and the event is called Active Fest, and it's happening July 14th, 15th, and 16th at the Boonville Fairgrounds.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, I had a thought on date rape, and I lost it here. So, I don't know. I find that you know, domestic violence comes in all shapes and forms, and it cannot completely be defined. But if you are in a place where you're feeling violated, where you're feeling emotionally abused, if you're always being knocked down, if somebody's saying you're so disgusting, you're worthless, you can't do anything, that is a form of abuse also, and you got to be aware that it's not you and it's not your fault. This is not your fault. Jackie has some information on the Mendocino County Youth Project, and I'll let her talk about that for a little while.
Yes, I have a quick mission statement from them, and it reads, "The Mendocino County Youth Project's mission is to support the development of healthy youth. We offer opportunities for children,
adolescents, adults, and their families to acquire the guidance and skills they need to enhance self-esteem and establish healthy relationships so they may contribute to and strengthen our diverse community. And it's interesting how it says we offer opportunities to acquire the guidance and skills they need to enhance self-esteem and establish healthy relationships. I know with my own experience, I'd grown up sometimes with, you know, with my mom having kind of a pretty outrageous temper that was hard to control, and we've definitely been past that stage, which is wonderful. But, you know, there are times last year in college when I would find myself just blowing up at my boyfriend and just totally, you know, not being able to control my own emotions and not being just, you know, feeding that same cycle that, you know, that I had learned from in my youth. And just knowing that I was doing it helped me. And, you know, having the support of your partner in that situation, if you just reach out and say, you know, if you're the abuser and you say, this is why I'm acting this way, if you can figure out just, you know, what perpetuates it, it stops. It almost stops that day, you know, and it's very difficult to come out and say, you know, I have a problem, I can't control my temper, or I can't control my anger, or whatever. But once you do it, you know, you definitely feel a lot better. And Amanda is going to give us some more numbers.
Yeah, there's a couple numbers for the Mendocino County Youth Project, and the first one is from Fort Bragg, and the number is 463-4915, and also that was for Ukiah, sorry. And the next one is from Fort Bragg, and that is 964-1228. And there's also one here for Point Arena, and that is 882-1945.
And I'd just like to say that we have about 4 minutes left in the show, so if there's a caller out there just waiting to say something, the number once again is 895-2448 or 1-800-499-7117. Don't be shy. Oh, here we go. You're on the air.
Hello, I just like to tell you how much I respect you kids for coming forward like this. I think it's absolutely wonderful, and I think we all need to keep in mind that these kinds of behaviors thrive in when they're hidden, and that one of the most important things that we can do is bring them to the fore and name them so that others who are in similar situations can also come forth and start the process of understanding what's happening and reaching out with some kind of compassion to people who have these problems. I myself in the 60s was a victim of date rape, but we didn't really have a name for it. Mm-hmm. So it was just sort of what happened, and mm-hmm. that was too bad.
Right.
And I think as these things get more publicity and the dynamics become more public knowledge, and you're all part of that process, and I just want to say as someone in the older generation how much I appreciate you kids and what you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks.
We have another caller.
Okay.
Caller, you're on the air.
I understand why it's difficult at school and the stigma that appears to happen when you are in a situation where you want to keep your family secret secret. And I also feel that it's probably not the best place to divulge those things unless it's, you know, to a personal friend. But I think the classes the teachers try to help are good because some kids can get in them and vent, but there are a lot more kids probably who feel the way some of you do that it's impossible to, you know, speak about that. So my suggestion, I haven't heard anyone say anything yet on the program, is that a family doctor is really a wonderful person mm-hmm. to talk to, and you always have a reason to go.
Yes.
And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings up an
interesting question for me. Should peer counseling be mandatory in school?
You know, I've gone over that idea many times, and peer counseling, the only problem with making that mandatory is it's a very open class. People have to be willing to share their feelings. They have to be willing to express themselves and be okay with themselves to let the mask down. I think it is a great program and everybody should be involved in it, but I don't think it should be mandatory because people might not be ready to express themselves just yet.
Good point.
That's definitely a really important thing is people have to be ready. Talk when you're ready to talk. I know personally for me, I was urged to talk about my situation a long time before I was ready to. And that really helped, you know, add to my frustration. It was really hard for me. And that just, I really encourage you to talk when you're ready to talk. That's definitely an important thing.
Well, I'd just like to thank our callers. Please tune in.
And that's all for this month's edition of What You Don't Know, Youth Speaks Out. Your hosts tonight have been
Jackie,
and Amanda. And thanks to our callers. One of the purposes of this show is to involve the community in dialogue. So call-ins are what makes this show really happen. And we'd really encourage all listeners to give us feedback on our shows. And you can do it through email at the website www.kzyx.org/youthspeak or by writing us at KZYX, P.O. Box 1, Philo, California. And the zip code for that is 95446. And our next show will be on the last Sunday of July, and that's July 13th at 6 p.m. Thanks for listening, and good night.
The preceding portion of Youth Speaks Out has been brought to you by the Mendocino County Youth Project Share Crises Program. And the next Youth Speaks Out will be on July 30th.